Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Some of my listeners have taken it upon themselves to cancel contracts with British companies. I'm about to read a letter to you from a devoted listener that I received this morning, and I'll read the entire letter to you from the beginning in a moment. And I'm not going to tell you how much he donated, but it was a five-figure donation to the Michael Savage Defense Fund. I want to read you one paragraph in this letter. The man has a company that has 800 employees. He said, "We recently purchased and installed several freezing systems from the UK at a cost of approximately $5 million. I called the British Consul General today and left word that we will no longer buy them in the future. We will also cancel our plans to buy the first of four packaging systems at $2.2 million each from a British company and will choose otherwise." So when I say damage that Jackie Smith did, I am again appealing to the British government, who perhaps understand what is at stake here. This is only one listener of millions. I have no idea who else might do something in terms of canceling contracts. Again, I want to repeat, I have no grudge against the British people. In fact, I've been an Anglophile all of my life. I've always admired the English people for their, well, for many different things. Now let me go into the letter. "Dear Michael Savage, I'm a 52-year-old first-generation American. Similar to your background, mine was also unusual and shaped the nature of my destiny and insight to the world. My grandparents fled their home in the Hatay region of Turkey during the genocide, only with their lives. They settled in Jerusalem, where both of my parents were born. God had blessed my grandfather, father, and family, starting with nothing. Through great hardship and tenacity, they built a prosperous business. They would design and build tooling and machinery for their automotive engine rebuilding business. They had contracts with all the major bus companies throughout Palestine, Nazareth, Bethlehem, Beersheba, and many more. My father, always with great foresight, was fed up with the fighting which led up to the partition of Palestine and the formation of Israel. Their business was at the center of a no-man's land. They were fired upon from both sides. We believe the formation of Israel was a fulfillment of biblical prophecy. However, being Armenian, this was not our fight. My father quickly and with stealth moved the shop to Amman, Jordan, where it continued to do well. Ultimately, my father dreamed of coming to this great country, and in 1948 he moved his new wife and baby. He knew this nation was unique and special. My mother and father had raised seven children. My father started at least a dozen businesses, not all successful. All the way teaching my brothers and me what it took to be an entrepreneur and build a business, we struggled very much. My father, brother, and I started a bakery in 1978 with meager resources. Being machine designer builders, we designed and hand-built a unique high-speed process for baked goods. The company's history was much like your own, Michael, filled with brutal events of survival. I believed it was the prophetic prayers of my grandmother that preserved us during their flight from the hands of the Turks in 1915. She had said, "Oh God, may one small remnant of bread be left over after our meal, that we won't go on in hunger," close quote. We now, my brothers and I, by God's grace, are the industry leader, employing 800 people, converting 12 truckloads of flour a day into high-quality product at a great value, shipping it worldwide. Even though I have experienced great personal success, the warnings of my grandfather and father, they passed away in 87 and 93, gripped my mind. My father was proud of this country, but constantly feared the poisons of the radical left. He would often comment, "This country will lose its freedom because people don't know the value of what they have." My grandfather in the 1960s was horrified to see some of the most radical Muslims he knew from the old country now living in the United States. Shocked that such people would be permitted to enter the country, he would say, "Someday these types of people will burn this country to the ground. will be like sheep for the slaughter, close quote. I and my family have worked so hard to build a future. I, like yourself, fear for my family's future. I see what is rapidly coming. God is our only hope. Michael, God put you in the place you are in for a reason. Much like he put Queen Esther in the court of Xerxes to save his people from Haman, I know he has a plan for you, and I will continue to pray that he strengthens you and restores the courage that he has blessed you with. You may not believe it, but you are part of God's plan. Your boldness, fearlessness, and righteous indignation are unmatched. Michael, I beg you not to give up your fight. I have been listening for nearly 6 years. I don't miss a word of your show. I quote you constantly throughout the day. They call me Steve Savage. Your fight is my fight. Again, I am reading from a letter from a listener who made a Major League five-figure donation today to the Savage Legal Fund. He said, we recently purchased and installed several freezing systems from the UK at a cost of approximately $5 million. I called the British Consul General and left word that we will no longer buy them in the future. We will also cancel our plans to buy the first of four packaging systems at $2.2 million each from a British company and will choose otherwise. I am sending the Thomas More Law Center a large donation for your defense fund. It's the least I can do, considering the dangers you put yourself under daily. Michael, I know you don't know me, but I love you as a brother. You are like my father and grandfather, all in one. You are the only one fearlessly claiming the truth, no matter how ugly. I would be honored if you could meet me, if I could meet you sometime when this current battle is under control. Truly, it's a dream of mine. I want to say much more, but I am a Schmendrick on the keyboard. Godspeed, Michael. That came to me from a listener who will remain anonymous in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know what the evidence of a true democracy is? Loud, forceful disagreement in the political marketplace. When you hear no loud political discourse, you know you're living in a dictatorship. When you hear the amen corner agreeing with everything the president does, you know that it's over and the republic has died. As long as you can hear voices saying, I disagree with you, Barack Obama. I think you're terrible. I think you stink. I think you're wrong. I think you're crazy. Then you know you still live in America. You still live in America where there's a hope, where we can still have political discourse. The day it becomes illegal or immoral or dangerous to disagree with a president is the day you've lost your freedoms, my friend. So stay tuned, because I am a lightning rod of change. I am a lightning rod of hope. I am a lightning rod of disagreement. I am a lightning rod of the changes that you are hoping for, which is a change for the better rather than a change for the worse. Sure, he's giving us change, but this is not the change that most Americans want. And I would say even those who voted for this college professor did not expect so much radical left-wing activism so quickly. Sure, they expected something other than George Bush or that sad old man John McCain, but they didn't expect the neo-Marxist agenda to be forced down their throat. That's not what they voted for. It's all a lie. I want to digress for a few moments because I've been hammering you pretty hard on this issue for a few hours now. I've had conversations with some strangers over the last few days, and I found out that I have listeners where I never knew I had them. I knew I had listeners far and wide, and I knew that the listeners ranged all over the economic scale and all over the ethnic scale and all over the political scale. And I also knew that I had many listeners behind prison bars, and that's because people who are trapped behind prison bars have very few options to exercise their minds. Many of the people behind prison bars never had formal education. Many of the people behind prison bars never had the opportunity to read and to try to understand for themselves what is going on. And they find my show, they may at the beginning not have understood, they would have said he's the biggest A-you-know-what in the world, but after they've listened to me for a while, they start to say, you know what, this guy makes sense on this, he makes sense on that. And they've heard me say that all of us are one mistake away from being locked up in this country. You've heard me say it. We have more people in prison proportionate to the overall population than any country on earth, and that's a very sad statistic. There are over 1 million people locked up behind bars, sometimes for minor infractions. No one is arguing that we should have tiers for the murderer, the rapist, the pornographer, the counterfeiter, the terrorist. No one is saying that. But there are too many people behind bars in this country, and they're thirsting and they're hungering for something from the American media other than talking about breasts and panties. Somebody talking about something other than a hockey puck of flying into a cage, somebody talking about something other than a moron swinging his arms and hitting a ball. They want to hear something about their life and the meaning of life and why they're behind bars and what they're going to do with their life when they get out from behind bars and how they can make a meaning out of their lives. And I am talking to you if you are in a prison cell or on a Gulf Stream. And I know I'm talking to you if you're behind a prison bar or on a Gulf Stream or in a Chevy or in a Prius. Why? Why do I exist? I exist, my friend, because you want me to exist. If you didn't want me to exist, I wouldn't be here. The reason I exist is because you need me. The reason you need me is because there's a desert out there. There's a desert in the American media. And I am wandering in this desert with you. Not trying to make the Red Sea part, but trying to make you see within this Red Sea that you are a part of this sea of life. And this discussion today, if we never have another discussion about this, and I don't know that we will, I often don't get this worked up. But I'm very worked up because I have seen what happens with people who want to do good and where it can lead to. Watch out for the do-gooders. The do-gooders will nail you to a cross faster than you can say Roy Rogers. And they will do it in the name of progress. They will do it in the name of advancement. They will do it in the name of helping you, but you will be hanging from that cross and begging for mercy nevertheless. I am telling you that embryonic stem cell research is not a noble endeavor. He's paying back yet another constituency, which is the abortion racket, celebrating as I speak, because they are going to make fortunes again.
Savage.
Oklahoma druggist arrested for killing holdup man. Now, you have to read the entire story from the Associated Press to realize that the two holdup men, both of whom were black youths, were armed with guns. You have to read the whole story until you read that they were armed with guns. I'll read you the story and you'll see what kind of sickness passes for journalism today. Oklahoma City AP, Tim Talley, Associated Press. Oklahoma druggist arrested for killing holdup man. Confronted by two holdup men, pharmacist Jerome Erslin pulled a gun, shot one of them in the head, and chased the other away. Then in a scene recorded by the drugstore security camera, he went behind the counter, got another gun, and pumped five more bullets into the wounded teenager as he lay on the floor. Now Erslin has been charged with first-degree murder in a case that has stirred a furious debate over vigilante justice and self-defense and turned the pharmacist into something of a folk hero. Erslin, age 57, is free on $100,000 bail courtesy of an anonymous donor. He has won praise from the pharmacy's owner, received an outpouring of cards, letters, and checks from supporters. His adrenaline was going. You're just thinking of survival, said John Paul Hernandez, 60, a retired Defense Department employee who grew up in the neighborhood. All it was is defending your employee, business, and livelihood. If I was in that position and that was me, I probably would have done the same thing. D.A. David Pratt said Erslin was justified in shooting 16-year-old Antoine Parker once in the head, but not firing the additional shots into his belly. The prosecutor said the teenager was unconscious, unarmed, lying on his back, and posing no threat when Erslin fired what the medical examiner said were the fatal shots. Anthony Douglas, president of the Oklahoma chapter of the NAACP, that's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, called it an, quote, execution-style murder, and praised the DA for bringing charges. Erslin is white. The two suspects are black. Parker's parents also expressed relief that Erslin faces a criminal charge. He didn't have to shoot my baby like that, Parker's mother, Cleta Jennings, told a local TV station. But many of those who have seen the video of the May 19th robbery attempt at Reliable Discount Pharmacy have concluded the teenager in the ski mask got what he deserved. You hear this? Now, the pharmacist is a former Air Force lieutenant colonel who wears a back brace on the job, told reporters he is a disabled veteran of the Gulf War. Shannon, one caller to a radio show, said he should have put all the shots in the head. Don Spencer, a 49-year-old National Rifle Association member who lives in a small town in Meridian, 40 miles north of Oklahoma City, said the pharmacist did the right thing. You shoot more than enough to make sure the threat has been removed. Anyway, that's the story. Now, you have to read on to find out what actually happened because, as you know, the Associated Press is so twisted they may as well be working for Joseph Stalin in the 1940s in the Soviet Union. So let's read on. The pharmacy is in a crime-ridden section of South Oklahoma City and had been robbed before. The video shows two men bursting in, one of them pointing a gun at Ursuline. So you have to read the whole story to find out one of the poor black teenagers had a gun, and that one of the poor black teenagers point the gun at the pharmacist, and two women working with the druggist behind the counter. That came in later. See, that's what they teach you in journalism school today. Bury anything that shows that the perpetrator is actually a perpetrator. Make them always innocent, and always make the innocent man guilty! The video shows two men bursting in. Points a gun at Ursuline and two women working with the druggist behind the counter. Ursuline fires a pistol, driving the gunman from the store and hitting Parker in the head as he puts on a ski mask. Ursuline chases the second man outside, then goes back inside, walks behind the counter with his back to Parker, gets a second handgun, and opens fire. On the Oklahoma's Make My Day law, could you play some rock and roll? This is horrible. On the Oklahoma's Make My Day law, passed in the late 1980s, a name for one of Clint Eastwood's most famous movie lines, people can use deadly force when they feel threatened by an intruder inside their homes. In 06, Oklahoma's Stand Your Ground law extended that to anywhere a citizen has the right to be, such as a car or office. It's a Make My Day case, Box said. This guy came in, your money or your life, Mr. Ursuline said, you're not taking my life. The gunman forfeited his life. Box said that another person might have reacted differently, but he asked, when do you turn off that adrenaline switch? When do you think you're safe? I think that's going to be the ultimate issue. If convicted, Ursuline could be sentenced to life in prison with or without parole or receive the death penalty. You hear this? The 14-year-old boy accused of wielding the gun in the robbery was arrested Thursday. The DA said he will seek murder charges against a teenager, a man accused of being the getaway driver, and another man suspected of helping talk the teens into the crime. The story is Oklahoma druggist arrested for killing holdup man. I have no questions for the jury. None whatsoever. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
Tennessee, JD, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, Mike, long time, man. I've been listening to you for I don't know how long. Can never get through because you're the hardest working man in show business.
But love it, love it, love it. Well, what made you call? What made you call tonight?
One Arm Frank is the number one stunner in your book. Man, I was in the military, and I had a guy that I knew, man, and his breath was so stinking, man. I'm talking about his car smelled like his breath. The interior in his car smelled like his breath. Even in the cold, we was trying to ride with him in his car. My car broke down. We had to let the windows down in his car.
And wait a minute. You're not saying he had one arm, are you?
You couldn't take it. And when you roll the windows up, it's like it was embedded in his interior. Everything. Man, you could smell him 10 feet away from him. That's how bad.
But I want to ask you something. I'm not being cruel in any way. Did he have one arm?
No, sir. No, sir. But I'll never forget the guy. This guy was from North.
No, but he had a breath on him that I say was a medicinal problem. Like you had to go to a specialist to cure this.
I don't know what, Mike, but his breath smelled like a sewer. It smelled like a bad. I remember.
Well, JD, did you get the book yet? Did you? JD, can you hear me? Did you get a copy of the book yet?
No, sir. Yes, Rena.
Well, you're going to. Hold it. Don't go away. Stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy, but I want to read you and ask you if this is what you're talking about. I said, in those days. Blah, blah, blah. So One Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but he had sick breath. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, and then there are very bad breaths, and then there are medicinal problems. This one had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. I remember one winter my old man was dropping Frank off at his home. Frank was in the passenger seat, and I sat in the back. It was -4 degrees out, but we had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever meet a person like this? Whenever he spoke, the car filled with a nauseous fume. Are we going past the meat factory? No. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and the smell shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something? Nope. I mean, I took my shoes off. No, but it was only Frank talking. Okay, JD, no, don't go away. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Everybody loves that story. They don't understand that those, because I think that was before mouthwashes. Nobody, you know, JD, that's another interesting side story here. In my father's generation, a man would not use a mouthwash or a deodorant. You know that.
Yes, sir. He got the tissue.
If a guy used an underarm deodorant in my father's day and a mouthwash, you know that they felt he belonged in San Francisco.
Man, you're the best, Mike. You're number one in the nation.
No, I mean, if they caught a guy and they went in his bathroom, let's say they had to use the John, and they saw a roll-on deodorant and a mouthwash, they never talked to him again.
Man, I haven't seen this guy in years, but I'll never forget him because of his breath. Man, I've never smelled the person's mouth.
Hey, JD, let me ask you something. Are you a musician by any chance?
No, sir. But I do.
Well, you sure have a musician's sense of humor. I got to tell you that. JD, a free copy, Psychological Nudity, going out to you in Tennessee because you made me feel so good and laugh so hard. I got to tell you, that's a great call. That is a great call. You see, we can transcend politics, race, generations, all with what? The miracle of humor, the miracle of communication. It is a miracle. It's a miracle, and I'm gifted. I know it's a gift. It goes back, again, not to dwell on the past, but how did it start? And this is not in the new book, but it should be. Because it's a very important story. I've told it once in 15 years. First grade, New York inner city school, play, auditorium. Now, I don't know if you know, there are some people who are terrified to give a speech in front of them. These could be tough guys, tough kids, murder, tough as nails. You put them in front of an audience, their face turns red. They can't say a word. They can't say anything. It's a gift. If you can do it, it's a gift. Okay, it doesn't make you better than the other guy. It happens to be a thing you have. It's like another guy can run, jump, throw a basketball, whatever, fly a plane. But talking in front of an audience, so I didn't know I could do it. How do you know if you could do it? You have no idea. But although we were poor, my mother wanted me to look good, so she bought me a little blue suit. It was probably $9. This was before Dead Man's Pants, when we had less money. She bought me an actual suit that fit in my size. It was probably in Bonnie's Boys Town, wherever she saved money. So I had a little blue suit. So the teacher said to me, look, you're the only kid in the whole school with a suit. I said, I don't know. So she's get the suit, bring it in, you're going to be the announcer for the assembly. I got up, I saw a sea of people, and I wasn't frightened. I enjoyed it. It was like a sea of faces. It's an interesting thing looking at an audience if you don't panic. It just looks like a sea, like a little waves chopping around in there. They don't look like people to you at that point. Anyway, I learned that I could talk to an audience, and that's how it started. That's all there was to it. And it was a gift that I had at that time, and that's all there was to it. Now, I'm going to move up one grade, two grade, three grade, four grade. Now, I was a short kid, and I had gone to school early, then I skipped a grade. So I was younger and smaller than most of the kids. So if I'm in elementary school, and it goes up to the eighth grade in those days, there was no junior high. It was like 1 through 8, then high school, 9 through 12. There was no intermediary school where you learn how to have, you know, sex, whatever. In other words, it was right into the eighth grade. Now, picture this. So in this school of 1 through 8, K through 8, it was 1 through 8. There was no K. The K, you were home already with the grandmother who didn't speak English in kindergarten. There was no such thing as kindergarten then, because the mothers didn't work. You sat around and you watched them make Jell-O or whatever. So 1 through 8, you had kids now 5 years old in the first grade. And in the eighth grade, you might have a dummy who was also left back because of truancy and bad behavior who might be 15. So you had kids ranging in age from 5 to 15 in the same school. Now, picture me. I go in the bathroom. I'm in the fourth, fifth grade, and I have to go to the men's room. It was like terror, blackboard jungle. There were no monitors. There were no cops, no nothing. You might have a 14, 15-year-old, like, giant maniac in that bathroom, and you're this little kid who's got to go in there and do your thing. So I had to figure out how to go in there and come out with, like, not being killed. So I found out that I'd go in and right away I'd arrest the guys. They were usually slower. Okay, admittedly, they might have been violent, but they were slow-witted. So you had to, like, charm them rapidly. So I'd go in, a short little kid, younger. I have to use the bathroom. How do I get out of this terrible thing? I still have nightmares to this day. I don't like public bathrooms. I hate them. Really, it goes back to that trauma. Go in, look the big guy in right in the eye. I'm not going to threaten him. He'd kill me. I'd tell him a joke. I'd look right in the eye and point at him and say, hey, listen. And while he's like mesmerized, like snake charming, with the other hand, I'm taking care of the urinal, doing my stuff. By the time the idiot figured out I was giving him a double talk, I was out of the bathroom. That's how I learned to tell a joke.
Savage.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this. Mama said,
Mama said, Mama said,
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this. My mama said.
Now look, I was going to do a light show today talking about a murder here, a terrorist incident there, a nuclear bomb there, something easy, something nice, light and easy. But my gut tells me that you didn't want a nice, easy show, so I'm going to give you a hard show. For years I've told you that our media has become like Pravda, which means the truth in Russian. And I've told you for over a year that Obama is a naked Marxist. For 6 months I've said to you that they smeared the conservatives by calling them neocons, while they are neo-Marxists, and the phrase is not used by anyone but me. It'll be stolen now by the hemorrhoid with ears. He'll put down his chopsticks and get out the pencil. But an article just came out that I'm going to read to you in its entirety, and I never do this. And you know where it's from? Pravda. 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 Online since January 27th, 1999. This is from Russia. American capitalism gone with a whimper. It must be said that like the breaking of a great dam, the American descent into Marxism is happening with breathtaking speed against the backdrop of a passive, hapless sheeple. Excuse me, dear reader, I meant people. Now, I invented the word sheeple over 12 years ago. True, the situation has been well prepared on and off for the past century, especially the past 20 years. The initial testing grounds was conducted upon our holy Russia, and a bloody test it was. But we Russians would not just roll over and give up our freedoms and our souls, no matter how much money Wall Street poured into the fists of the Marxists. Are you listening carefully? Those lessons were taken and used to properly prepare the American populace for the surrender of their freedoms and souls to the whims of their elites and betters. Are you paying attention, schmuck? First, the population was dumbed down through a politicized and substandard education system based on pop culture rather than the classics. Americans know more about their favorite TV dramas than the drama in D.C. that directly affects their lives. They care more for their right to choke down a McDonald's burger or a Burger King burger than for their constitutional rights. Then they turn around and lecture us about our rights and about our democracy. Pride, blind, the foolish. I'm reading to you from Pravda. Now here it comes. Everything we've been telling you. Then their faith in God was destroyed until their churches, all tens of thousands of different branches and denominations, were for the most part little more than Sunday circuses, and their televangelists and top Protestant mega preachers were more than happy to sell out their souls and flocks to be on the winning side of one pseudo-Marxist politician or another. Bravo! Their flocks may complain, but when explained that they would be on the winning side, their flocks were ever so quick to reject Christ in hopes for earthly power. Even our holy Orthodox churches are scandalously liberalized in America. The final collapse has come with the election of Barack Obama. His speed in the past 3 months has been truly impressive. His spending and money printing has been a record-setting, not just in America's short history, but in the world. If this keeps up for more than another year, and there is no sign that it will not, America at best will resemble the Weimar Republic and at worst Zimbabwe. Are you paying attention, schmucks? You morons who voted for Obama? You schmucks, you don't even know what you did here. Shall I go on? These past 2 weeks have been the most breathtaking of all. First came the announcement of a planned redesign of the American Byzantine tax system by the very thieves who used it to bankroll their thefts, losses, and swindles of hundreds of billions of dollars. These make our Russian oligarchs look little more than ordinary street thugs in comparison. Yes, the Americans have beat their own thieves in the sheer volumes. Should we congratulate them? This comes from Pravda, the place where truth hurts. Isn't it funny that we have to turn to a Russian newspaper to get the truth because of the Associated Press in America? How many months have I told you that Wall Street was filled with thieves? Obama was put in by Wall Street to reward the crooks. Goldman Sachs, in my opinion. Morgan Stanley. The bankers who bankrupted America were all given money back by the capitalist stooge in chief. I'll continue now from Pravda. These men, of course, are not an elected panel, but made up of appointees picked from the very financial oligarchs and their henchmen, who are now gorging themselves on trillions of American dollars in one bailout after another. They are also usurping the rights, duties, and powers of the American Congress. Again, Congress has put up little more than a whimper to their masters. Then came Barack Obama's command that GM's president step down from leadership of his company. That is correct, dear reader. In the land of pure free markets, the American president now has the power, the self-given power, to fire CEOs, and we can assume other employees of private companies at will. Come hither, go thither. The centurion commands his minions. So it should be no surprise that the American president has followed this up with a bold move of declaring that he and another group of unelected, chosen stooges will now redesign the entire automotive industry and will even be the guarantee of automobile policies. I am sure that if given the chance, they would happily try and redesign it for the whole of the world, too. Shall I go on? We are talking about the descent of your nation into Marxism at the hands of Barack Hussein Obama, a pure 100% communist. Of A, the United Soviet Socialist of America. You've gotten exactly what you wanted, you left-wing vermin. You rats, you. You vermin, you. You filth. You losers. I'm reading an article from Pravda, a Russian online newspaper. American capitalism gone with a whimper, and it's about Obama being a naked Marxist, which I've told you about. They know it because they've lived through it, but you don't know anything because you're concerned with a human being who can sing a looks like the back of Stan Laurel's trousers. And then it goes on with Barack Obama taking over the automobile industry, and he says, I am sure that if given the chance, they would happily try and redesign automobiles for the whole of the world, too. Prime Minister Putin less than 2 months ago warned Obama and UK's Blair not to follow the path to Marxism. It only leads to disaster. Apparently, even though we suffered 70 years of this Western-sponsored horror show, we know nothing as foolish, drunken Russians. So let our wise Anglo-Saxon fools find out the folly of their own pride. Again, the American public has taken this with barely a whimper, but a free man whimper. So should it be any surprise to discover that the democratically controlled Congress of America is working on passing a new regulation that would give the American Treasury the power to set fair maximum salaries, evaluate performance, and control how private companies give out pay raises and bonuses? Senator Barney Frank, a social pervert, basking in his homosexuality, this is from Pravda, complain to Putin if you don't like it. Senator Barney Frank's a social pervert, basking in his homosexuality, of course, amongst the modern enlightened American societal norm, as well as that of the general West, homosexuality is not only not a look down upon life choice, but is often praised as a virtue, and his Marxist enlightenment has led this effort. He stresses that this only affects companies that receive government monies, but it is retroactive and taken to a logical extreme. This would include any company or industry that has ever received a tax break or incentive. The Russian owners of American companies and industry should look thoughtfully at this and the option of closing their facilities down and fleeing the land of the red as fast as possible. In other words, divest while there is still value left. The proud American will go down into his slavery without a fight, beating his chest and proclaiming to the world how free he really is. The world will only snicker. Written by Stanislav Mishin, and appearing today in Pravda. American capitalism gone with a whimper. Now, many of you are too stupid and don't have the education to even understand what you just heard. Your education level is so low, your brainwashing is so complete that you couldn't even follow that which I just read to you. All you know is racism, homophobia, global warming, and which singer on American Idol looks like the back of a pair of pants worn by the Marx Brothers. So, read it. You liberals did it to America. You destroyed the country. First, the population was dumbed down through a politicized and substandard education system based on pop culture rather than the classics. Americans know more about their favorite TV dramas than the drama in D.C. that directly affects their lives. They care more for their right to choke down a McDonald's burger than for their constitutional rights. Then they turn around and lecture Russia about our rights and about our democracy. Then their faith in God was destroyed until their churches, all tens of thousands of different branches and denominations, were for the most part little more than Sunday circuses. And their televangelists and top Protestant mega-preachers were more than happy to sell out their souls and flocks to be on the winning side of one pseudo-Marxist politician or another. That's Rick Warren. That's why he was chosen to moderate a debate. He's one of those sellouts. Their flocks may complain, but when explained that they would be on the winning side, their flocks were ever so quick to reject Christ in hopes for earthly power. Unbelievable. The final collapse has come with the election of Barack Obama. His speed in the past 3 months has been truly impressive. His spending and money printing has been a record-setting, not just in America's short history, but in the world. If this keeps up for one more year, and there's no sign that it will not, America at best will resemble the Weimar Republic, and at worst, Zimbabwe. Now, that sentence makes sense if you didn't go to an American school, because you don't know what the Weimar Republic is, because your education level is that of maybe a fifth or sixth grade level. And Zimbabwe, you don't know what that is because you weren't allowed to see what happened when black rule took over in Zimbabwe when they threw the white farmers off the land. You haven't been permitted to see that because that would have been considered a racist teaching. When they kicked the white farmers off the land in Zimbabwe and gave the land to black farmers, a land that had previously been exporting food to the rest of the world became a basket case with a tin cup because they can't even grow enough food to feed themselves. That's the future of America unless Barack Obama is not stopped. He must be reined in by Congress. Unfortunately, we have no Congress. That's what I really want to talk about. But you want to talk about the other stuff. I'm not going to do it. Let's drop the pharmacist stuff.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'm going to devote a little time now to a very, very important book by Sinclair Lewis called It Can't Happen Here. This book was written during the last Depression. In fact, just before the last Depression is when it came out, or during the middle of it, and copyrighted 1935. I wouldn't waste your time, but I'm not going to waste your time because you must hear what Sinclair Lewis wrote. Now, I want to remind you, Sinclair Lewis was a socialist. He projected a future America where a right-wing government would take over the country. You hear? Where a right-wing government would take over the country. And he, in his fiction, It Can't Happen Here, Sinclair Lewis wrote, the 15 points of victory for the forgotten men written by the Democrat candidate for the United States President, Buzz Windrip. And I'm going to summarize some of these 15 points. During the very first week of his campaign, Senator Windrip clarified his philosophy by issuing his distinguished proclamation, The 15 Points of Victory for the Forgotten Men. Now, I want to remind you, this is a fiction written in 1935 about what would happen to America if a right-winger took over the country. One, all finances in the country, including banking, insurance, stocks and bonds and mortgages, shall be under the absolute control of a federal central bank owned by the government and conducted by a board appointed by the president, which board shall, without need of recourse to Congress for legislative authorization, be empowered to make all regulations governing finance. Two, the president shall appoint a commission equally divided between manual workers, employers, and representatives of the public to determine which labor unions are qualified to represent the workers. Number three after the revolution. In contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals, now remember, this was a projection of what would happen should a right-winger take over the government. In contradistinction to the doctrines of red radicals with their felonious expropriation of the arduously acquired possessions which ensure to aged persons their security, this league and party will guarantee private initiative and the right to private property for all time. Four, believing that only under God Almighty, to whom we render all homage, do we Americans hold our vast power, we shall guarantee to all persons absolute freedom of religious worship, provided, however, that no atheist, agnostic, believer in black magic, nor any Jew who shall refuse to swear allegiance to the New Testament, nor any person of any faith who refuses to take the pledge to the flag, shall be permitted to hold any public office or to practice as a teacher, professor, lawyer, judge, or as a physician, except in the category of obstetrics. Five, annual net income per person shall be limited to $500,000. No accumulated fortune may at any one time exceed $3 million per person. No one person shall, during his entire lifetime, be permitted to retain an inheritance or various inheritances in total exceeding $2 million. All incomes or estates in excess of the sums named shall be seized by the federal government for use in relief and administrative expenses. Shall I go on? I can go on. Congress shall have the sole right to issue money, and immediately upon our inauguration it shall at least double the present supply of money in order to facilitate the fluidity of credit. Did you hear any of this? Are you listening to me? Or you didn't hear this morning on the Blowhard show, so you don't know what you're listening to. Are you realizing what's going on here? Here it is. I'll read this to you from page 69, written in 1935. They realized that this country has gone so flabby that any gang daring enough and unscrupulous enough and smart enough not to seem illegal can grab hold of the entire government and have all the power and applause and salutes, all the money and palaces and will and women they want. They're only a handful. But just think how small Lenin's gang was at first, and Mussolini's, and Hitler's, and Kemal Pasha's, and Napoleon's. You'll see all the liberal preachers and modernist educators and discontented newspapermen and farm agitators, maybe they'll worry at first. But they'll get caught up in the web of propaganda like we all were in the Great War, and they'll all be convinced that even if our president maybe has got a few faults, he's on the side of the plain people and against all the tight old political machines, and they'll rouse the country for him as the great liberator. Did you hear any of this? But will Americans stand for it long, whimpered Emma? Oh, no, not people like us, the descendants of the pioneers. Oh, no, it can't happen here. Shall I repeat to you that it has happened here? Shall I repeat to you who has done this? Are you recognizing the fact that Sinclair Lewis, although he was frightened of a future government taken over by the right wing, did not even see himself as the prophet he was, and that this country would be taken over by a gang of left-wingers, the Obama gang? Are you aware of the fact that the country has been taken over by a gang? A daring gang, an audacious gang, the audacity of revolution. An audacious gang has taken over America. And there they are, ladies and gentlemen, printing money as though they own it, taxing the people who earn the money, and making deals with communists around the world under the guise of peace and freedom. Now, I want you to take the arc of what Obama has done so far and project it ahead 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years, and ask yourself, if this man is not stopped, what this country will look like, what your family will look like, and whether your freedoms will be intact in 3 or 4 years unless this man is opposed at every turn. There was a British newspaper that published Obama's 10 strongest critics. They said Michael Savage is amongst them, and they quoted one thing I said. They quoted me correctly. They said the following. Michael Savage says that Obama has never heard anyone say no to him ever since his boyhood in Hawaii. As a result, he has a messianic complex, and he continues to do things that are disconnected from reality that simply aggrandize more and more power to himself. They got it right. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Anthony, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I do not understand why the media fears you so much. over the weekend, I listened to two radio stations, and they actually beeped out your name.
Well, C-SPAN is run by a twerp by the name of Brian Lamb, who is a front for the Democrat establishment. Brian Lamb is an evil little man who exists only on taxpayer money. Brian Lamb runs C-SPAN, and the, let us say, left of center, anytime they had an intellectual dissident who was a giant, they simply made believe that intellectual giant who was a dissident didn't exist. They blacked that name out from the newspapers, they blacked that name out from the media, and eventually they put those names on a list, and they took those people away and put them into the Gulag Archipelago. So I'm in very good company. That a twerp like Brian Lamb would bleep my name out and you would hear it indicates just what a threat I am to them. Now, the second question, the more important, is why am I a threat to them? Isn't that the real question?
Well, we know why, because like you said before, your voice rings a truth that can't be denied. And this, the media is so terrified of you because they know that you can make such a difference. You are making such a difference.
Well, they know I stand for certain things, which they oppose. I stand for firm borders, English as the national language, and the cultural bedrock that this country was built upon, borders, language, culture. They stand for the opposite. They stand for open borders. They stand for multiple languages, and they stand for no culture other than the statist culture. So I am their natural enemy. They also understand that I'm probably the, well, let's put it to you this way, amongst the most articulate in the media. They could never challenge me directly. If I had Brian Lamb on this show, I would chop him up to pieces. He wouldn't even fit back into his size 3 shoes when I got through with him.
Well, Dr. Savage, I have to say that I think...
Let me tell you something. A year ago, I was granted the Freedom of Speech Award by the talk radio industry, as you may know. And I gave a very important speech that they refused to run. And they refused to run it because I was already on their Stalinist list of non-persons. That did not stop multiples of 10,000s of people from buying those copies of my Freedom of Speech Award. And I'm going to send you one right now, Anthony. Stay in the line. Stay in the line. Anthony gets a free copy of Michael Savage's DVD, his most important Freedom of Speech Award. Mississippi James, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'd love to know why you seem to hang all the present problems on the Obama administration and the Democrats and liberals when I feel like both parties are equally culpable in this mess we're in, and I wish...
Well, we've heard that before. You must be a new listener, and you probably didn't hear me criticizing George Bush for 7.5 years.
Oh, no, sir. I've listened to you for years.
Well, last year I called George Bush a fiscal socialist, did I not?
You did that.
All right, so don't accuse me of being partisan in this manner. However, the magnitude of socialism has been amped up to a point of no return under Obama. How in the world can you justify $2.2 trillion in spending without disclosing who got that money, unless you're a gangster?
Oh, I don't, sir. It's awful.
All right. We have a gang that took over America, but they're a very clever, cunning gang. They're not acting like a gang, are they?
No, they're not.
Well, they are. They're acting like a gang, only they're pretending to be nice guys. Quote, we can go back to the dark ages. The crust of learning and good manners and tolerance is so thin. It would just take a few thousand big bombs to wipe out all the eager young men in all the libraries and historical archives and patent offices, all the laboratories and art galleries, all the castles and Periclean temples and Gothic cathedrals, all the cooperative stores and motor factories, every storehouse of learning. No inherent reason why your grandchildren, if anybody's grandchildren will survive at all, shouldn't be living in caves and heaving rocks at catamounts. Sinclair Lewis, it can't happen here. My friends, it is happening here.
Savage.
I have a couple of things I want to tell you about. A, how I just survived coffee at a Starbucks in San Francisco. This took the patience of Job. Before the show, I went down. I do almost everything myself to know what Life 101 really is. I could hire someone. But, you know, I figured out it's actually good for me to otherwise, I wind up like George Bush Sr. Wow, golly be gee, that's a checkout stand in a supermarket. Whoa, cool. Wow, that's a laser. Ooh. No, I got to go buy coffee and see how you people suffer, fools, ungladly. Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks. It's not easy, I got to tell you. I'm in a rush. It's like, you know, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though. And bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of the sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the, oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me. And did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there. But no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated. The guy didn't even know what she said. That's right. And a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it first, she pulls out a coupon, a transgender discount. In San Francisco, the mayor gives out transgender discount coupons. Insane societies, they used to give out discount coupons to war veterans. In this city, they give them out to transgendered people. That's right. In San Francisco, TGIF has a new meaning. That's right. TGIF has a new meaning in San Francisco. Transgenders, it's Friday. Prior to surviving Starbucks, I did something even more threatening to my psyche, which was I went to Fisherman's Wharf. I got into the city early, so I went by bicycle to Fisherman's Wharf. I haven't been there for a year. I stopped going for about a year. I went once this year. And I went and had a bowl of clam chowder soup and some joint near the water. The guy gave me a bowl of cornstarch with the droppings of a clam in it. I don't know how they didn't get arrested for this. How do they sell this on Fisherman's Wharf? Then the nerve of this mutt, he says to me, do you want a cup or a bowl? I was in a rush. I was on the phone. I said, give me a cup. The cup was $5.95. A bowl would have been a dollar more. I paid and left. I didn't care. But the point was the soup was garbage. How do they serve this to tourists? With it was like cornstarch with the essence of a squeezed clam in it? But the schmucks don't know what they're eating. That's why they call it the Redneck Riviera. You should see the blimps walking around down there. You know, you should see the average American. I don't know what they have in their brains. IQ average, 65 after a fish meal. They walk into cars. They walk in front of cable cars like blimps floating around. Stuffed, stupid, morons. You can push them in any direction you want. So I'm bicycling back past two U.S. warships in World War II, the Jeremiah O'Brien and the USS Pompanito, a U.S. submarine from World War II. You marvel at it. 120 men were in that thing in World War II. If you were to take that ship today, and look at the average fat, obese, disgusting American tourist walking on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. A, you couldn't get more than 18 of them into that submarine. B, you'd have to sue the Navy under the ADA to have them blowtorch open the hatches to get him in and out.
Savage.
Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
It's good to talk to you. You know what really I enjoy the best about your show is when you go into the stories of one-armed Frank and, you know, growing up in the five boroughs. We had a Tom the Bum and young kids running down the subway. We learned charity from Tom the Bum.
Hold it. You're going to tell us a story. Quick, Tom the Bum, I'm listening.
Okay, Tom the Bum had one arm also, and he would stay in the subways, and our mothers used to, you know, he was like the horror show. He used to run down there, run on the other side.
Yeah, all right, so, right, you went down to see him, it was like Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Right, but your mother would send you down there with food, and you'd, like, push the food with your foot, and you'd say, hey, Tom, eat this, because he was an alcoholic, you know? But he had one.
Oh, but you didn't want to actually touch him. That was absolutely, because you could get leprosy.
You don't know what you're going to get. You know, you're scared, you're a little kid. But, you know, we learned charity with this guy. Tom the Bum was one of the best surgeons in the neighborhood. He cut his arm off because he lost a patient, and he became an alcoholic.
Wait a minute. Did you just make that up?
No, this is not. This is true, Mike. This is true. Tom the Bum.
What do you mean? He was a doctor who lost a patient, and he hated himself and cut his arm off?
Became an alcoholic and cut his arm off, and he lived in the subways. So we had to take care of him.
He sounds like a saint. The guy's like a saint, this story.
You know, but that's where we learn charity. You know, like these one-armed Franks, Tom the Bum. We all have stories.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Las Vegas, Paul, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, I hate to inform you, but my wife tells me I no longer can listen to you because I assume because as educated as you are, you know that the sugar levels go up when you're a diabetic when you get stressed. And she says, with the traffic around here and listening to you and getting all upset with these idiot callers you got calling in, talking about the Guantanamo Bay getting...
Oh, yes, that Osama bin Laden's friends should have constitutional rights when they don't even understand the constitutional rights do not apply to foreigners who are trying to kill you. They apply to U.S. citizens, not to people trying to take away our U.S. and our citizenship.
Yeah, they're all a bunch of friggin' idiots, but...
Thank you. Well, hold on. You mean what? That's the one that got you upset where you almost had a diabetic, went into diabetic shock?
Yeah, that's basically how it is. My sugar levels get up to about 600 or 700 by the time I get home just because.
Wait, are you in a car right now, Paul?
Yes, sir.
All right, hold on. Play Robert Reich for him. I'm going to do it. Hold on. What's your blood sugar now? Do you have an instant meter?
Yeah, it's sitting at about 400.
All right, is it on your finger right now? Because we're going to play a soundbite for you and see where it goes. Are you ready?
Uh-oh. Okay,
no, but we got to play the game. You say your blood sugar's at 400. Now I'm going to play something for you. You got to be honest. You got to tell me where the blood sugar goes up, whether it goes up or down. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
No, is it on the finger now?
Yes, it's. I got to prick it as soon as you start doing it.
Yeah, but how do we know what the rate? Okay, the last time you did it was how long ago?
About 5 minutes ago.
All right, and it was at 5 minutes ago, but that's already when you were angry. It was at 400.
Yeah, I jumped up to 400 because of that.
All right,
idiot.
Get ready. When I say three, we're going to fire away Robert Reich, and then you're going to prick your finger, and we're going to get a blood sugar count. And a one, and a two, and a three.
I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers.
All right, what's the reading, Paul?
Well, I'm sitting at 480 right now, and it's going to keep on climbing. That idiot, I have to give you a little sideline, is that I'm a white male construction worker.
Oh, I shouldn't have done this then. Now I apologize.
I'm going to jump over 700 or 800. She's going to kill me now.
Oh, my God. Now, how do we get it down? How do we help you get the blood sugar down? Because I don't want to have you have a problem in the car there.
Well, your music is perfect because it brings you back to the days to where men...
All right, hold on. Which one of the music pieces can we use to bring down your blood sugar?
The Ding-a-ling song.
All right, hold on. First of all, we're sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Already it went down to 500. Now we're going to play Giddy Up Ding Dong. It'll go back to normal. Play Giddy Up Ding Dong for Paul.
Giddy Up Ding Dong, Giddy Up. My hearts were tired and I was too. I had a date with my gal at 8. Come on, ding dong, we can't be late. Giddy up, giddy up, ding dong, giddy up. Giddy up, ding dong, giddy up.
Oh my God, if I don't know. No music, turn it off. My father, I could hear his voice in the car. Turn off the music, no music in the car. You're going to work now. But Dad, I'm not at work. Never mind. Never mind. No music in the car on the way to work. No music. But why, Dad? We're not there. We're only on the Kosciuszko Bridge. No music. You're going to work. Get your mind ready for work.
Savage.
Atlanta, Georgia on WSB. Rick is a Satanist who wants to talk about the supernatural. Rick, welcome to the program.
I heard you mention something about Satanists earlier, and I didn't understand what you were trying to say. Something about Satanists claiming they could give people power or something to that effect?
Well, if you are a Satanist, tell us why you engage in Satanistic activities.
Because I believe that the three main religions of the world, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, I believe they're false religions. I believe that they don't accept people for who they are and what the real desires are.
So the real desires are to hurt others?
No, not, I wouldn't say that. But I would say that definitely for self-defense purposes, that should come into play. And if someone has done something wrong to you, I believe that revenge is perfectly acceptable behavior.
So in other words, you as a Satanist engage in revenge.
If the person has hurt me with the intention, with no other reason but to hurt me, and they deserve punishment, then I would say yes. But that doesn't mean I directly go out and touch them. A Satanist relies on other means to do things like that.
No, I understand how you think. I'm just curious as to why you engage in Satanism.
Well, after looking over religions of the world, that's the one that appealed to me the most. To me, Satan is very honest. To me, the God of other religions are liars. That's the way I see it.
So you find it a positive thing to be a Satanist?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very practical, very realistic, and it's also very moralistic as well.
But, it's moralistic to be Satanistic.
I believe so, yes, because you actually look at life as it is and instead of trying to twist it into something that it's not.
But what is life? You say you look at life as it is. What is life to you?
I think life is a struggle. It's a struggle to survive. It's a struggle to maintain independence.
Right. We agree on that. But why do you assume that the religions of the world are false and your way is not false?
Because I believe that the main religions of the world want you to deny your basic impulses, such as sex, or indulging in some kind of pleasure. I think those are normal things that people should be allowed to.
So, in other words, you should indulge all of your impulses?
No, not all of them. I mean,
well, you just said that religion makes you deny your impulses, and therefore they're false. But don't you understand that that's the exact purpose of religion, is to constrain man's more base impulses?
That's the purpose of the main religion of the world. Yes, I agree with that.
You think the world would be a better place if they engaged in every one of their impulses? If people engage in all of their impulses, it would be a better world?
No, I didn't say that. What I mean is...
Well, you just said that religion is false because it teaches people to constrain their impulses. So therefore, you're arguing that we should then, let it all hang out? If it feels good, do it?
That's kind of simplifying things, but as long as, I'm not saying you can go out and infringe on other people's rights just because that makes you...
Oh, wait a minute. What about a man who molests a child? He's just letting his impulses hang out. Is that acceptable to Satanists?
No, that's not acceptable. No, not
why? Why not? By your definition, religions that prohibit that are just out of touch. So therefore, you must be in favor of all impulses being enacted, or are there some that you're not?
No, I don't believe you should engage in an impulse that hurts another person.
An impulse that hurts another person, therefore, is forbidden. So then you're arguing that Satanism has some morality attached to it, or some moral code.
Yes, I do. But
okay, so what is the moral code? Has it been codified anywhere that I could see it? The Western religions, Judaism and Christianity, have the Ten Commandments. Do you have the Ten Commandments of Satanism?
Not really. It's basically, live your life, be an individual, and don't try to change who you are just to please some other person's religion. That's basically what it is.
So if you have an impulse to murder people, that's obviously prohibited as well.
That's prohibited, yes.
But why?
Well, because morally, I don't feel that's correct.
Morally? So where do you get your moral values from? Where do they generate from?
I believe personally that deep down inside, people have their morals. It's already instinctually ingrained. I believe that deep down people know.
Oh, I don't. I don't think that people have any morals instinctually ingrained at all. I don't think there's any evidence to that. I think you can teach a child to be anything you want that child to be to a great extent, to a very large percentile. You can take a child and turn that child into a suicide bomber. Take a look at the Palestinian territories. They're training their babies to kill. They have no morality. To them, morality is blowing somebody up. So I disagree entirely. I think the human being is an empty slate.
Well, it's true that a lot of things are imprinted on us as children, but I think deep down innately, even a child will know that it's doing something wrong if it was to, you know...
Yes, a normal child raised by normal parents who have some moral foundation with some moral teaching coming from somewhere will understand right from wrong. However, if you don't teach the child something, how can the child come to know what's right and what's wrong? There are children who are mean-spirited. They'll tear the wings off flies. They'll kill birds. They'll climb into a bird's nest and break the eggs. They will go out of their way to hurt other children. I've seen them, and they have perfectly fine parents. I believe that there are children who are born who are absolutely monstrous, that they're born evil. And likewise, I believe there's a small percentage of people who are born absolutely good who will never do harm. But by and large, people, I think, are blank slates.
I understand what you're saying, but I still think...
Well, look, we don't have to, you know, hate each other or disagree. I don't think we do, really. It sounds to me like you don't go out of your way to hurt others. Maybe you're hiding it. I don't know.
No, I don't hurt other people. But I believe that, you know, when it's time to stand up and fight, you should stand up and fight it and not hide to some false morality and claim that some God is going to save you. You need to save yourself when it comes time to do
that. Well, that I understand, but I don't know that it's Satan that's going to save you. I think it's a survival instinct. What anyway, Rick, thank you for calling the show. Savage. You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com? Contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. This is the Savage Nation, the first and most important story in the United States of degeneracy here. Adult star Marilyn Chambers found dead, and she broke through into the public's consciousness, polluting the American mind forever, in the 1972 film Behind the Green Door. And I guess this proves that Mama Savage was right when she said sex is dirty, in the sense that years ago, when I had my mother on the show, God rest her soul, she died about 5 years ago. She was, how old was Mom? 88? She made it that long? I don't know. God, what longevity. My father kicked the bucket young, God. The men always die younger because we work harder, you know, particularly in the older generation. That's how it was set up. Women didn't work in those days. Most women didn't work. The men worked, they worried. The women shopped, cooked, cleaned, and complained. And then they got the left the money, and they moved to Florida, and then they complained again to the surviving children that the Chinese and Italian wasn't as good as in New York. That's the way of all life. Hey, I got to tell you another joke. I mean, a joke. It's dark humor. I went out with a friend of mine last night. So he swore to me that his stepfather has a phrase on his tombstone that says, "Where are we going for dinner?" I said, "What?" He said, "I swear to you." He said he was known for one phrase, "Where are we eating dinner tonight?" I said, "You're kidding me." He said, "No." He says, "Just like your show." He said, "This is all a man ever talked about in his last 50 years. Where are we going to dinner?" So his surviving wife put on his tombstone, "Where are we going to dinner?" No, but my mother was right when she said sex is dirty. You know, that's so opposite today. When you got kids 9 years old sending naked pictures of themselves with parents saying, go ahead, enjoy yourself. Don't do it. You know, go ahead, don't get in trouble. Go ahead, enjoy yourself. The mothers are like sluts today. Take a look at them. You ever go to a mall? You don't know which one is the teenager. What is the mother trying to compete with the daughter to be a bigger slut than the daughter? No wonder the daughters is texting themselves naked. All right, but sex is dirty. My mother was right. So when I called my mother years ago before she passed away right in this show, you remember what she said? She caught me off guard. Play it now. What do you think is the secret to longevity?
What's the secret?
Yeah. Because you're an elder. You're 83.
Yeah, my case, what it is, I think.
What?
No sex.
All right. 1-800-449-8255. Look, you're getting things out of order here. You're talking about military affairs when I wanted to talk about Marilyn Chambers, the star of Behind the Green Door, dying, and my allegation that sex is dirty. Steve in Las Vegas got the right idea. Thanks for calling the Savage Nation, Steve.
Hi, how you doing? Nice to talk to you. I love your show, man. You're right on target.
But go ahead. Now the good news.
Well, the good news is I've been in over 300 XXX movies. I actually knew Marilyn. I'm actually shocked to hear this right now. I'm kind of a little bit shaky because I knew her pretty well. So I suppose I'm going to be getting phone calls.
Didn't she have cancer for a number of years?
She did. She had been battling it. But I heard
Steve, look, let's be real, and I'm not going to put any moral judgments on what you do for a living. I mean, my positions are pretty clear, and people enjoy pornography, whether or not they admit it or not is another story. There certainly is a consumer base for pornography, or it wouldn't be there wouldn't be a market for it. So let's let that sit as it may, okay? But you know and I know that exposure to different individuals and multiple exposures to many individuals, no matter how safe you try to be, does expose you to disease. That's a given. And you would know that in your industry, correct?
That's correct, but we have procedures that protect us from those diseases.
All right, then let's get very, very Swedish about this in clinical. Let us say that a man has intercourse with a woman using a condom. Is there not still an exchange of bodily fluids to a certain extent?
There is, and there's always a risk. This is true.
So, you know, I mean, guys like you, you're how young are you? How old are you?
Well, I'm 44 now. I was in the industry when I was 24 to...
Oh, 30. Okay, so you're changing tires now in Cleveland.
yeah, I have a...
Nah, well, at least you got a sense of humor. You know, you talked like you were still in the business. What are you doing? What does an ex-porn star do?
What's that? What's an ex-porn star
What
do?
Does an ex-porn actor do?
Well, first of all, I have to give you a little bit of background on me. I graduated from...
Oh, please, sir. I'm not that interested. What do you do now?
What do I do now? I'm in the security field.
Oh, you're going to tell me you're a Navy jet pilot?
No, I'm in the security field.
How do you know, this is an intriguing thing. I never met anyone in the porn business, honest to God. I never did. So, I want to ask you something. You do that for a living. Do you have normal relations with a woman in addition to that?
Well, my wife is still the biggest star in that industry, which is Alicia Rio. We were married, and we were in the industry together for the whole
how
time.
How can you do that? I don't understand it. How can you do sex for a living and then have sex with a wife? I don't get it.
Well, you know what? It's a different frame of mind. You know, it's not for everybody, and not anybody can do it. I think
now you're telling me you have children running around and you go to church on Sunday?
I'm newly married, and I have a little child, and I have nothing. She has nothing to do with the industry.
Was John Holmes what they said he was? Was he on the level of the Cuban Superman?
Yes, he was. He is the truth that all men were not created equal.
Hey, you remember in The Godfather 2 when they go to Cuba and Frito gets excited over the Cuban Superman? Do you remember that scene?
I vaguely do.
Yeah. Was there actually a man, the Cuban Superman?
Well,
all right, come on. Now this is getting absurd. But I heard rumors of the Cuban Superman in New York when I was a kid, you know, and then the movie came out, and it was like, oh, you know, big deal.
Right.
You know, I want to talk about that for 1 minute in a delicate family manner, and I want to put something to rest. And I really want to do this in a very dignified manner. A lot of men fear that they are not endowed adequately to satisfy a woman. And they also suspect that all women are size queens. That's not true, is it?
It is not true. In fact...
And I'm going to give you the converse of that. And I'm going to make a prediction if it hasn't already happened. The artificial breasts that you see today promulgated, the silicone implants in women, is there not a trend now that men want the natural woman?
This is absolutely true, actually.
In other words, the idea of this perennial youthful look, which is so plasticky, is a turnoff for most men. And not all men are turned on by women who are large-breasted. Some men like flat-chested women. Some men like women with small breasts. And I think the same thing is true with women towards men. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're right.
And this is not, you see, but this is not part of the national psyche. The national psyche is if it's bigger, it's better, and women love you more. And I think that this was a very important conversation, which is why I said, although we can talk about Cuba, and we will, the death of Marilyn Chambers, the porn star, is actually more important.
Savage.
Savage.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I've expressed exactly what I feel about Obama and his minions. I've told it to you, neo-Marxism. I tell you my fears that we'll be living in a Cuba-like society within a few years if this man's trajectory is not stopped. In other words, if you let this man win at every turn, this radical professor, this radical street organizer, this Saul Alinsky clone, if you let this man win at every turn within 3 weeks, where would you be in 3 years? Think Castro's Cuba. All of your freedom of speech will be gone. All of your freedom of expression will be gone. You'll be arrested. People will be spying on each other in this country under the guise of peace and love and compassion. That's my deepest fear, is that this man has to be stopped. No man should be a dictator. I don't care whether he's a conservative or a liberal. No president should have absolute power. And you're now living where Big Brother wants to dictate every aspect of your life. Obama had the nerve to pass a child health bill that the Democrats rewrote to include illegal alien children, meaning illegal alien children are now going to get a gold-plated health care system, courtesy of you, the moron taxpayer. He got away with it. There was no talk of it in the newspapers. The so-called prophets of our time, the low-life journalists who are cousins to the low-life politicians on the left, did not even let you know that you were just screwed by another Marxist bill. Where is the money going to come from? Doesn't matter. As long as the children have health care, even if they're illegal aliens, doesn't matter whether they have the money for it. So as I say, if you don't stop this man, you're going to have a total dictatorship in this country. And we know what the model is. The model is Cuba. That's the model. You don't have to look any further. You don't have to go any more extreme than that. The opposition to Castro disappeared long ago. They were either exiled, self-exiled, left the island, or they were executed, or they were imprisoned for up to 30-some-odd years. Don't say it can't happen here. It will happen here, unless this dictator is shown that he is not a dictator, but he is the president of a republic of the United States of America. Do you understand this? Now, what are the signs of what this man might do if his grandiose schemes are not inhibited? I think that was well put. If his grandiose schemes are not inhibited, what might he do? Well, how about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms? We know that all dictators do not want an armed populace. Not that that means very much anymore, because with the advent of the tax squad, and the power of the police. What are you going to do with a gun? Are you going to defend yourself? You'll defend nothing. Look what they did to the poor Randy Weaver in Ruby Ridge. They killed his wife and son. And not one of those criminals in the ATF or the FBI went to jail. They shot Randy Weaver's son in the back with a scoped rifle. That's your government at work. They killed Mrs. Weaver. They shot her. I watched the hearings, and I knew that America died that day. When I saw the most evil woman in the history of American politics, Dianne Feinstein, conduct the Soviet show trial of the trials of surrounding the deaths of Randy Weaver's wife and son. They put up a curtain to protect the identity of the murderers, the ATF and FBI agents, who shot Randy's wife and son. And Dianne Feinstein sat there like the Chinese Mandarin she appears to imitate. And I remember to this day how she spoke. Tell us how it happened. Happened, Agent X. So the calico curtain was blowing in the wind and you could not see clearly when you pulled the trigger, correct? Yeah, Diane. Diane, if there is a heaven and if there is the other place, I am sure there's a place waiting for you in the other place. That's all I can say. Because we know that you're so powerful right now as chairman of the Senate Armed Intelligence. It's impossible for me to believe that this hack, this harridan, is now the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. I've never seen anything like this. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun are now in charge of where our troops go. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun now read the most intimate intelligence reports and decide what shall and shall not be acted upon. They put our boys in danger, in harm's way. That's where the country is today. So looking ahead, the prognosis to Dr. Savage, for the Dr. Savage, my prognosis for America is very poor. I am sorry to tell you this. I won't say I'm depressed any more than a cancer surgeon would be depressed if he opened up a patient and he saw that the disease had metastasized almost to the point of an irreparable cancer. I do not know what can be used to save this patient. I do not. And for me to say to you there's hope, I would be lying to you. And I'm not going to lie to you, because the day I start lying to you about politics is the day I'll resign.
Savage.
You know, I see the whole world through many different ways, in many different ways, excuse me. And I could tell you that today I saw the world through a chicken leg. I know you're going to say, what's he going to say now? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to say now. I can even describe the world as it is today through a chicken leg. Let me explain. I wanted to make chicken soup today. I haven't made it in 10 years. I once tried it 10 years ago. Then I made it about 3 months ago. But I realized there was something missing from the chicken soup. I tried to think back to what my mother made. And I said, by God, what's missing are the chicken's legs. I wanted the chicken legs in the soup. The reason I wanted the chicken legs in the soup is very, very interesting to me anyway. And that is because I was looking for natural sources of hyaluronic acid. You don't know what hyaluronic acid is, but I'll tell you what it is. Hyaluronic acid has been found to reduce inflammation, lessen arthritis, and strangely enough, hyaluronic acid, or HA, is a component of our vitreous fluid in our eye. And strangely this year, I had an eye problem that was found in the emergency room to be resultant from some change in my vitreous humor. I've had minor arthritis come on in the last 3 months, which I've never had before. I've never suffered any of this before. And suddenly I was reading about hyaluronic acid, and I said, wait a minute. Two symptoms, both of which might be related to HA. Why don't I try to get some naturally? So I do my research, having a PhD in human nutrition, having written so many books in the field of nutrition as a pioneer in the field since the 1970s. I said, my God, look at this. Chicken skin, chicken legs contain high amounts of this component, hyaluronic acid. So I said to my housekeeper, could you please go get me a chicken with the legs? Tell the butcher you want the legs. I get a call back. No legs in the chicken. Can't find it in any market. What? I called a butcher. I said, where are the chicken legs? He said, we don't get the legs. I said, well, who gets the legs? He said, they're sold before we get the chicken, even if you buy a whole chicken. They're sold to people who make chicken soup. I said, of course. They're sold for chicken soup. That's what I'm trying to make. But then I thought, and I said, the greed in America is so great. The corruption is so great that you can't even buy a chicken with chicken legs and gizzards anymore, because the crooks at the top of the food chain want to suck out the chicken legs and the gizzards and sell them to someone else. It's like the old adage about the man who raised pigs and sold pigs. We sell everything but the squeal. But you can't even get chicken legs unless you're Chinese and you go to Chinatown. You see, because the Chinese are smarter than you are. Americans are kind of naive when it comes to food. They don't even know food. They don't understand food. They think food is multiple courses in a rotten restaurant that charges $99 for rotten food paired with bad wine. But the Chinese are much smarter. When they buy a chicken, it better be clucking. And when that chicken is killed, they better get all the parts that came with that clucking chicken, including the feet, just as my Aunt Bee did. Because the idea of buying a chicken without feet is the same thing as buying a president without legs. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I was laying in bed listening to the ocean. You ever listen? Maybe the ocean drove me crazy. Listening to the ocean, pound, 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 pound. I had this once in Fiji when I was in the years I was collecting plants in the Fiji Islands. I hated it after a while. You say, oh, how romantic. You spent all those years in those islands I almost lost my, I went off my noggin. You talk about the NAS. You can go insane on an island. There were no TV, no telephones. I had a call like by a radio telephone. It took hours. Nothing. No radio, no television, nothing. You can go crazy on an out island. Drinking a lot of Yangona with the Fijians, that's Kava Kava to you. That didn't do it. I mean, it's a sedative. But you listen to the ocean after a while on an island, day in and day out, day in and day out, you start to ask yourself, this planet in this universe is one universe amidst millions of universes or trillions of universes. How in the world could you believe that everybody that lived is somewhere either in heaven or hell? How can you believe that? How can you believe you are rewarded in this world if you're good and that if you're bad, you're punished? How can you believe that? I said to myself, I'm not telling you what to believe. I'm not asking you to give up your faith. I mean, a person needs to believe in something in order to guide them through life, so you may as well believe in anything you want to believe in. If it keeps you on the straight and narrow, good for you. But on the other hand, no matter how you stretch it, how in the world can you believe that? It's impossible, I said to myself. Now, I've gone in and out of this before. I mean, even don't get mad at me. I know you want to hear the regular stuff. Even Mother Teresa, if you read what she went through in her life, the doubts she had about the existence of God himself that she never expressed, you know that, don't you? I mean, you want to live in a fairy tale book that she was devout and believed everything that she said, then all right, go ahead. Then believe. Then go listen to the Clarabelle and Jack in the Box about Republicans good, Democrats bad. So what I'm saying to you is a little different. I'm not trying to do something to throw you off. But doubts are doubts about this whole thing are the essence of mankind. A dog doesn't doubt any of this because a dog doesn't understand it. Only a man can doubt this. And maybe it's a mark of a true believer to not believe at certain points. But right now, I don't know what it is, but I mean, you know, what's out there, man? It's like, hello, you know, let's keep going for another trillion light years and you're not going to hit anything.
Savage.
Dr. Savage, maybe you can help me. I haven't gone to the toilet very well in the last few weeks. You know, since Thanksgiving, I have a blockage. Can you give me some? Or I'm going to get another one. And there's something natural I could use because my wife and I are no longer doing the funny business together. And I don't want to use that stuff that makes your vision turn blue with mild blindness. I told you one of the side effects of Viagra is temporary blindness in some men. I jokingly said that that's part of the effect that's desired. That's why you can still do it with someone you live with for so many years. It makes you temporarily blind, and that's it. You put the blinders on instead of taking them off. Not so funny, the poor women, what they have to put up with. No wonder the men die first after they put up with us for so long. They're supposed to get it all in the end. I don't know what they do with it, frankly. I don't know if they enjoy themselves. They seem to enjoy themselves, the older women. A, their sex drive has left them. They're not bothered with that. B, they could do without men. They found out that it was all a myth to begin with. They had the children already, the grandchildren. What do they need men for at a certain point? They got some money. They can travel. They can play pinochle or whatever. What do they do in the old age homes? I know I'm never going to wind up in assisted living or old age. Never. I know I'm never going to be there. My mother wound up in an assisted living. I told you it was only about Italian or Chinese. That's all she would talk about. If I'd say, Mom, my latest book is a bestseller for the 15th week of the New York Times, she'd say, that's nice. You know, I had Italian last night. It wasn't so good. It wasn't as good as in New York. That's all. I get that repeatedly. Is it any wonder I'm slightly warped when it comes to certain issues in the world, particularly relationships of some kind? You can understand why. I mean, everyone has their thing. No one's perfect. I never alleged to be perfect. Let me tell you that. Oh, no. You never heard me say I'm Mr. Perfect, did you? So criticize all you want. I never said I was perfect. Maybe you think you're perfect. But I know I'm imperfect because I'm a conservative. Only liberals think that they can either that they are perfect or they can achieve perfection. Go take a look at most of their behaviors and their children. You'll see how perfect they are. No, I have figured out that if I should live long or longer, let's say, personally, I know you're not interested in this, but I may as well say it anyway. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, the sands of time, the hourglasses, you know, the sand. There's more sand now down on the bottom than there was on the top. You know what I'm saying? Like if you take the hourglass of your life, if you're a certain age, there's more sand up above in that glass than there is down below. In my case, most of the sand already has gone down to the bottom glass. Let's put it to you that way. No matter what the end result may be, most of the sand is already down in the bottom glass. I'm starting to think about certain things I would ignore up until now. I'm immortal. I'm not going to. Because people say to me even today, well, what do you want to do at the end? I said, I'm never going to die. They think I'm crazy. I won't make such plans. I will not make such plans. I'm never going to die. I'm never going to get sick and old. How do you like that? In other words, say I'm foolish. Well, all right, call it what you want. I knew kids when I lived in Hawaii, mainly Japanese Americans, at 19 years old, they knew who they were going to marry. They knew where they were going to get married, how many children. They knew where they were going to be buried. At 19, they had it all worked out. There are societies that do that to this day. I don't understand that kind of living. I can't do that. I'd rather live in a sense of a man who's going to live to 1,000 years, because I remember that character out of Zorba. You remember Kazantzakis' great, great character, Zorba the Greek? I love that character. Of course, it was a distortion. As it was played by Anthony Quinn, one of the great filmic characters was Zorba, as played by Quinn. But do you remember the scene where he's leaning against the window and he says to the woman, a man like me should live 1,000 years? What a great line that was. That's the way to go through life every day, by the way. I don't like men who at 50 say, well, at my age, or I'm 50 and I should think that at 50 already I got one foot in the grave. Why think that way? Why start taking that attitude? Because you're just going to speed up your own aging and die young anyway if you do that to yourself. That's all. Next case. Moving on. Oh, so I was saying, even if, let's say, I should become enfeebled by accident or by disease, I'm never going to go to an assisted living. I want to stay in the house, and I want to have care. That's all. I don't want no hospital. I don't want to be around a hospital. The other people smell. I depress you in those joints. There's no reason to be there. You get around-the-clock care if you can. That's all. I don't know if the family's going to go along with it, but that's what I'm going to do. I'll make sure that I, you know, put it away for that. What, do I want another car? I'd rather pay for care. I just got my Social Security form. Do you ever get one of those? I've been getting it for, like, years. It shows you what you earn going back to 1968. I couldn't believe it, how much they take from me. I could not believe how much they robbed from me on the Medicare. Like 2.5% of my gross income to support bums, disgusting, filthy bums, while I'm still working? 2.5% of my gross is given for Medicare so illegal aliens can come here and have a heyow on my dime? I can't believe this government. It's thievery. Why am I paying 2.5% of my gross for Medicare?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Now, let me talk about my dog for a minute, because it's a very interesting thing. If you see the world through the eyes of a dog, you can see an awful lot of the world that you normally wouldn't see. I went for a walk downtown, in the downtown, as people were boarding buses and running to the underground and getting in cars to go home. At about 6:15, 6:30, I walked around the streets of downtown San Francisco for the first time with my little dog. Now, he's a small dog. He's a 9-pound toy poodle. And I noticed something peculiar. Not that he peed on over 50 to 100 items in that 30-minute walk. That unto itself is a biological phenomenon that I don't understand. I don't know if there's sufficient liquid in his body to have covered all of the garbage cans, telephone poles, bushes, etc., in that short radius, but somehow he manages to muster even more fluid just when you think it's impossible. It's like watching a high wire act that you say can't go further, and it goes further. So to make a long story short, I'm walking little Teddy around, and I'm watching the people go home. It's one of the things I enjoy doing. I like the hustle and bustle of a city. I go berserk if I stay in the suburbs too long. I go berserk, totally berserk. So I watch the people coming and going. I watch them going into the bars. I enjoy watching people relieving tension by having a few drinks after work in the upscale bars downtown. I like the boys and the girls talking, the men and the women, etc. The car's coming, the car's going. And I generally just enjoy being alive and feeling the fog on my face and hearing the hustle and bustle of a city at the end of a day's work. But I noticed something as I walked little Teddy around the streets, which is how few people even noticed there was a little dog in the street. How many of them were like robotic. Now, I got to tell you something. A little dog like this is not a common sight in San Francisco. In fact, what's amazing is how few dogs you ever see in the downtown area of San Francisco at all. There are dogs in San Francisco, but they're generally not in the work district. That's not 100% true in other cities. In some cities, you actually see animals downtown. But let's just put that aside for a minute. You don't see dogs there too often. You don't see a cute little dog like this. The point I'm getting at is that people are like automatons. They don't notice them. Now I'm going to ask you a question. What kind of person, race and ethnicity sex, do you think, A, notice this dog more frequently than the general population, and B, of those who notice the dog, who smile the most? This is a small, unscientific sample of downtown San Francisco from which we can generalize if we choose to, which we will. Because I find that generalizing from subjective observations is as valid as generalizing from objective generalizations, observations. What did I just say? Anyway, the question is, who do you think smiled at the dog the most? And who do you think didn't even notice the dog the most? And B, why am I asking you this question? Answer, because I refuse to talk about Democrats and Republicans. Absolutely refuse, will not do it. Not my cup of tea. Now, if you're offended at me, I can understand it. And you can call me if you're offended. But I'm going to talk more about dogs and a movie I saw last night on The Savage Nation. Or if you're bored of those topics, I can talk about the care of old clocks. Because I collect old clocks. And many of you don't understand how incredibly wonderful it is to have a pendulum clock that's over 100 years old that still runs properly. And to wind it once a week. And to hear a tick. And to make sure that it's running properly is an amazing relaxation for me. I know, don't get me wrong, it's not the cure for anything. It's just a hobby of mine. Sacramento, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I definitely think that the Caucasian young females would like the dogs the most. No question about it. They still have
them. Well, that's very interesting. Yes, the dog is a chick magnate, but that's chick magnate. That's funny. I'm sure he's a chick magnate for other small toy poodle girls, but he is a chick magnate, but that's not what I use him for because I'm not in that category of operations at this stage of my life. But they were not the number one group that smiled at Teddy as I walked him the street. It was young and middle-aged Asian men, mainly Chinese men. Would you believe it? You'd never, ever expect that because you would think Asian men are very taciturn and to themselves and don't show their emotion like everyone else, but perhaps even a little more so. But the dog melted a lot of the Asian guys, and I saw them smile, and I thought it was beautiful to see. That's something that you should know for a couple of reasons which have no relevance whatsoever to the news. But what astounded me was how most people didn't even see a dog walking around amongst them. They were robotic. They didn't even notice them, you know. So now, before I'm going to take a few other calls on these wonderful topics in a minute, and then I'm going to talk about a wonderful film I saw late last night with its political implications to today's events. And the movie was called Shake Hands with the Devil, starring James Cagney, 1959, black and white, Turner Classic Movies, my favorite channel now. I just love that. I love the announcer. I love the elevated train. I love the whole thing about it. And then I settle back, and I know I'm going to get 2 hours of a movie, an hour and a half of a slower-paced movie from another time, shot in real film stock instead of video, so the depth is better. And it's particularly when you get a black-and-white movie, you're going to get not only depth, but you're going to get real color and great cinematography, as opposed to today's kind of overly processed Kodachrome, and I'm not knocking Kodachrome, Kodachrome-style colorization, which I don't like. And the reason I'm going to talk about James Cagney in this movie is I never thought he was such a great actor till I saw this. He plays a surgeon in Ireland in 1921, a teaching surgeon at a hospital, who by night is the leader of an underground movement for the Irish Republican Army. At that time, it wasn't called the IRA. It's quite gripping because the protagonist is not so much Cagney as it is an actor who plays an American medical student, a surgical student, who does not want to be involved in the fighting in Ireland. Because he had just come back from World War I, and he said, I've seen enough killing in my lifetime. I'm a friend of yours, but I'm not going to kill anymore. That's how it starts. But eventually, the American gets drawn into the battle, and it's against the black and tans, who are a particularly vicious group of thugs sent in by the British military to terrorize and brutalize the Irish into submission. Now, the story is not only a beautiful art, beautiful in terms of art and a great story, but it has phenomenal relevance with regard to Israel / the Palestinians, Iraq / the Americans, and other such topics today. And I'm going to talk about it from the point of view of that movie, Tampa, Florida. Ken, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. It's not a dog I'm talking about, but it's a 17-year-old cat, and golden cat, and it is an incredible story. I went on a trip to San Francisco. My brother lives in Reno, and we drove to San Francisco from there, and we had a hotel all set up, but we had no idea if we could get the cat in. So we figured, well, we better sneak the cat in. So we go through a whole incredible fiasco to get this cat in there. We get the cat in, and then we spend 3 days there, and we're leaving. And as you were talking about, who was more impressed with your dog? And it was amazing. When we left, I was walking the cat. I held the cat, and I walked right through the restaurant. And everybody, all the Orientals, I was in Japanese town, was so incredible. They were all just smiling and laughing, and they kept saying, "Tiger, tiger, tiger." It was amazing.
And it's funny because normally they wouldn't respond. They're very quiet people. They're not, let's say, they're not outgoing. But yet the animal brought that out, right? That's what you're getting at? I know it's very amazing. People don't believe this story.
They don't talk to you. But when,
right. Asian people love animals. That's the funny thing. Anyway, my friend, thank you. I want to move on to them because I don't understand how fast the show is going, but I know what's going on now. I'm back into my old format, which is forgetting politics and talking in general about more interesting things, and the time just flies. So I want to go to the movie. Listen to me. Shake Hands with the Devil, 1959, starring James Cagney. So the plot summary is as follows, and it's directly relevant to today's troubles in the Middle East. Believe me, it is. In 1921 Dublin, the IRA of the time battles the Black and Tans, and they were special British forces who used extremely brutal measures against the Irish. Then there's the Irish-American medical student, Kerry O'Shea, hopes to stay out of it, but while saving a wounded friend, he gets outlawed and then drawn into the rebel organization under his former professor, James Cagney, the professor. Complications arise in the plot, and I don't want to give it away. But he falls in love with a beautiful English hostage, and she's gorgeous. I don't know who this actress was. I think I have her name here. Jennifer Curtis. Never heard of her. Stunning. She could have been a big actress today. She had genuine beauty as opposed to the silicone frauds that are in Hollywood today, and doesn't look like a slut, mind you. We're not talking about cheap white trash, you know, who get away with it with a little silicone and slut-like behavior because of the vermin who run Hollywood. This was a classy lady. Here's the story and how it relates to the Middle East, in my opinion. You watch the movie. Now, of course, it was written to be sympathetic to the Irish. There's no question about it. And I'm sure that it was written with that intent. And it was written with that intent and played by Cagney, I'm sure, because he's Irish and wanted to show the side of the Irish, not the English. Now, without getting drawn into that whole English-Irish thing, please, let's not go there for the moment. I want to draw a parallel to what's going on in the world today. Towards the end of the movie, the general who was leading the IRA, who was not Cagney, is very happy because the British have agreed to a peace treaty. And the peace treaty will grant the Irish dominion, their own parliament, and whatnot. And then there's a showdown with Cagney, the surgeon, who says, "I'm not signing it." He said, "We agreed that we'd fight to the end to have total freedom." The general says, "But this is better than killing and bloodshed, which will go on forever if we don't sign it." And Cagney says, "The only reason they're offering you anything at all is because we've got him beat. I'm going to fight him to the end." So the general says, "Well, we're not going to fight him." He says, "Well, then there'll be a civil war between us and you." He said, "But we fought shoulder to shoulder," he says to Cagney, "for all these years." He said, "Well, that doesn't matter. I'll fight you to the end." Anyway, as the movie moves on, Cagney is shown to be a cold-blooded murderer, even though he's a surgeon and he's quite a sympathetic character through most of the movie. He is seen at the end for what he really has become, which is simply a bloodthirsty, psychopathic murderer. From all the years of violence, he has become an unredeemable man. The Palestine Authority, whether you like them or you don't like them, is irrelevant, want a homeland of their own. Whether you think it's right or wrong doesn't matter. There are 3 million Palestinians, and they're going to have their homeland. It's just an imperative of time. It's just going to happen, period. You don't have to like it. You don't have to like it at all. Well, you can love it. It doesn't matter. They're going to have a homeland of their own. Now, Then you've got elements within them who are so bloodthirsty, they've been steeped since childhood to hate and kill Jews, that they will never, ever sign a peace treaty. And just as in this movie, Shake Hands with the Devil, just as Cagney is killed off in the end because he's a bloodthirsty devil, that's what has to happen in Israel. And it's going to happen from within within the Palestinian Authority itself. They have to kill off the psychopaths amongst themselves to bring peace to the area, relative peace, and to see a two-state solution to the area. Only when the Iraqi government can kill off the bloodthirsty amongst them will they have a nation again. I mean, the movie is amazing. Highly recommended. Shake Hands with the Devil, 1959, black and white. And one more note about it, which is the imagery. The directing was pretty good, but by today's standards, you know, when a guy gets shot and there's no blood and there's no bullet wound, it doesn't make sense, that kind of thing. But the imagery is fantastic. The cinematography is extraordinary. The beautiful B&W photography is great. The director's Michael Anderson, cinematographer Erwin Hillier. And here you have a director at work who understands what he's doing. He understands the purpose of the movie, and he has the creative capacity to pull off what he's trying to do. It's a very unusual movie for its time. And I believe, although I'm not an expert on it, Scorsese and Spielberg are saying that this director's work, Michael Anderson, is deserving of much greater recognition. So I highly recommend the movie, Shake Hands with the Devil. And it's based on a novel by the same name by Reardon Connor. Reardon Connor. If you're looking for a rental. Savage. I am a food expert. Let's say everyone is a food expert for what they like. That is true. But I am actually a real expert. I detest fancy restaurants because the food is phony. I only eat in cheap restaurants because there the food is generally, it has to be better because the people don't have money and they know the difference and they're going to walk out unless the food is good. But anyway, to make a long story short, I have lived in Northern California forever. Now, I'm not one of these bagel and lox guys. I don't eat cream cheese, but I do like smoked salmon. Now, you would think that in Northern California, where you have such snobs about food, and salmon, they're all concerned about the salmon and it's not growing and you can't fish. You can't get smoked salmon that doesn't taste disgusting in San Francisco. It tastes so smoked you can't eat it. Everything is overdone. They smoke it to the point where I go in delis there. Fine, give me some salmon, but I don't want a smoky flavor. They look at you like you committed a crime. Well, isn't that the object? A bunch of schmucks came out there from Oklahoma, like, and then they invented the no food. You know, because minimalist and bad wine already, they're experts. You come to Southern Florida, where the people look like they were on the moon for the last several generations. They're all very short and squat with, like, faces that are, like, blown up from too much sun. I don't know what it is, seltzer, salt, genetics. They're generally nice people. They're benign. They're the type that Madoff took advantage of. They think they know everything, and they're basically sheep. They're like a herd mentality. But one thing they know is lox. I don't know how they know it, but that they know. Politics, they know nothing. They don't know who to vote for. They think Sean Penn is a wonderful guy, even though he hates Jews in Israel. They're that kind of people. But they know lox. I go in a deli, and I ordered a half a pound of Nova lox, which is smoked salmon, of course, for those of you who are not from areas where it's called lox. You think it's liquid oxygen for setting off a rocket, but no. Smoked salmon. And thin sliced. Now, you try to get it thin sliced in San Francisco, they'll throw you out. They don't know what you're talking about. And I'll tell you another giveaway. The way they present it here, it's flat. They roll it, and you unroll it, it comes out perfect. In San Francisco, they'll take a luncheon meat. If you say to them, sliced turkey, give me a pound of sliced turkey, they crush it up, and they roll it and throw it in a bag. It looks like cat turd by the time you get it home. And they think they're experts in everything. You hear this? No wonder the HIV rate is high in Washington, D.C., Now you say, what does the quality of lox in Southern Florida have to do with the HIV rate in Washington? Everything and nothing. Because these people know nothing about anything except lox. They'll keep electing officials who keep letting people into the country with diseases like AIDS. You understand that? And they'll keep going to movies and supporting people who are basically committing suicide for the country and for them. But they know locks. The important thing is that they're nice people. They're basically benign. I have Teddy with me, so I was walking around with it. Do you want to hear any of this? I don't care. I think I'm not doing politics for a while. I'm on strike. I told you I think I'm on strike because you've heard it all. By the time of the day rolls around, you have heard everything you need to know about the world and more. And the only reason you're listening to me is because I've done it differently, better, stronger, angrier, more intelligent, more intellectual, a higher IQ. But there's only so much you want to hear about him being a socialist, a Marxist, a communist. Even though it's all true, there's no point anymore. It's done. It's a done deal. The Italians have had a communist party for 75 years. We're the only country that pretends communist? Me? No. Obama, socialist? No. What? Incredible. We don't have a socialist communist party. You got a socialist slash communist party running the country right now. You're acting shocked. You don't know what's going on. In Italy, they've had one for years. They have the far-left parties in England, have them in France, they have them in Germany, but never heard of them here. Oh, they're Democrats. The Lox people don't know that they're communist socialists. If they knew they were communist socialists, they would jump off a bridge because they take away their condominiums from them and force them to put illegal aliens in their bathtub.
Savage.
Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome. What's on your mind?
You know, you're the quintessential analyst, so I have a question I've wanted to ask you for years. Do you see any redeeming value in the liberals? I can't find one, but
yes,
you can.
Now this is going to surprise you. You ask, do I, Michael Savage, arch conservative, see any redeeming value in liberalism? Correct.
That I can't find one.
Yes, the answer is yes, I do. And you'd say, well, he's going to say something sarcastic now. No, I won't. Rational liberalism is a very important break upon the excesses that might arise in an all-too-powerful bureaucracy or government would curtail the tendency towards an overreaching government, but in a rational manner. They wouldn't, for example, override a conviction against a terrorist from Algeria found with dynamite or explosives and timers in his trunk, would they? That's not rational liberalism.
Savage.